You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And moving on, in this vein, let's talk about the state of Illinois, which happens to be my state. Now, we are a computer server of a vendor with city and state contracts to sell Illinois license plate stickers and Chicago vehicle stickers at currency exchanges was exposed to the internet this past May. Now, although city and state officials insist there was no security breach, the vendor ELS has access to government systems and the personal information on hundreds of thousands of Illinois customers. So heads up to you if you're in Illinois and you've bought any kind of sticker for your vehicle at a currency exchange, you may have been affected. Moving on, we're going to be heading over to the UK and talking about the Milton Keynes Council. They have taken their government systems offline while they investigate an attack, a data breach. And so the spokesperson for the council said, and I quote, "We're aware of the attempted cyber attack on the council's planning portal. We acted very quickly and have taken the system offline while we investigate and add in additional security measures. At no point was any data at risk." So if you are listening to this, and I do have listeners in the UK and you're in Milton Keynes, your government websites may be down right now, and now you know why. Moving on, we're going to be talking about something called U-Hodler or U-Hodler. This is a digital currency loan platform. Now, security researchers from virtual private networks, security researchers from VPN Mentor, that's what I'm trying to say, excuse me. So VPN Mentor researchers have basically identified a data breach. This leak exposed 86 million records that contained information such as personally identifiable information, credit card numbers, and credit card verification values, as well as bank account details, and also regarding users' crypto wallets and transactions. So if you're using U-Hodler, for your cryptocurrency transactions in any way, shape, or form, you may have just had a serious data breach. Heads up. Moving on, we're going to stay in the financial world, but we're going to Robinhood. You might have heard of their commercials. This is an app that allows you to do stock trading. I think it's for like zero commissions right off of your phone. Now, they found in an internal security audit that they were storing some passwords in plain text, meaning when you sign up for a website like Robinhood or Facebook or whatever, they're supposed to encrypt the password so that nobody could go into their database, meaning a Robinhood employee, and actually read your password. That wasn't the case. Some of their passwords could have been read. And so basically Robinhood disclosed this publicly and said, please, we're forcing everybody to change passwords just as a precaution. Hopefully that wasn't breached. Hopefully that information isn't out there. But if you are using Robinhood and did not get that prompt, I would still change your password. Moving on, we're going to be heading down to Brazil real quick. An unprotected server belonging to Banco Pan, this is a financial services provider, has exposed a massive batch of data for customers of various local banks. Now, this vulnerability has been detected basically by the security research team of Data Group, and the total file size of sensitive personal information available to the public was estimated to be about 250 gigabytes. And so if you use Banco Pan or your bank uses Banco Pan down in Brazil, or you have any relation to them, heads up, you may have been exposed. Next, we're going to be talking about Deliveroo. Now, Deliveroo is kind of like DoorDash, and I know Amazon's got one, I can never remember the name of it, that they basically will deliver stuff to you. Now, numerous Deliveroo accounts have been hacked, causing basically a whole bunch of trouble, not just for the customers, but also for the company. Now, according to Forbes, these hacked accounts were available for sale on the dark web. It is unclear how the hackers gained access, but Deliveroo is saying that it's not their site. They didn't get hacked. Now, researchers found a phishing website that looked exactly like Deliveroo that may have that people may have gone to thinking they were actually going to the legitimate site and ordering, which is what would have had the account takeover as well as credit card information stolen. So if you use Deliveroo, one, make sure you're going to the right site, and two, definitely change your password. Next, we're going to be talking about the AMCA. Now, I've mentioned this in past radio shows and every week on my Breaches of the Week video and podcast, and basically, this is the American Medical Collections Agency. They got a breach, and they have been running medical collections for a zillion different medical outfits in the U.S., and so in the last couple of weeks, we had 9 major disclosures from medical outfits that use AMCA, and this is a complete mess because we're talking about more than 3 million records on top of the already probably 20 plus million records that are out there right now. So if you have anything to do with Austin Pathology, Natera, American Esoteric Laboratories, CBL Path, South Texas Dermatology, Seacoast Pathology, Arizona Dermatology, and Laboratory of Dermatology ADX, as well as Clinical Pathology Laboratories, you may have been affected. So if you have anything to do with them, you might want to check with them, because you probably are due for free credit monitoring and a whole bunch of other stuff. Now, as a result of this breach, and this is the other update for AMCA, the parent company of AMCA, Retrieval Masters Creditors Bureau, that's RMCB, filed for Chapter 11 in New York Federal Bankruptcy Court. Now, the reason why I find this interesting is, one, breaches like this, especially for the AMCA, they are bankrupting. I mean, nobody wants to work with the AMCA anymore, because they literally just got hundreds, if not thousands, of different medical firms from small to massive breached. But do you want to put your data there? So their reputation basically has been completely destroyed by virtue of their lack of cyber control here. But I think the other reason why they're probably doing this is because they're trying to get ahead of the inevitable lawsuits that come out of stuff like this. I guarantee you medical clinics are also feeling loss of reputation, because they now have to disclose to their patients to say, our billing process got hit, you've been exposed on our watch. And so I guarantee you that every single company I just listed there, not to mention Quest and LabCorp and on, are probably going to want to sue the RMCB, the Retrieval Masters Creditors Bureau. And so they are filing for bankruptcy protection, probably to deflect against that. And so that is the AMCA update. I guarantee you the next time I talk to you guys here on the radio, I will have another update with even more medical firms coming out. This one is going to keep going. And finally, the last thing we're going to be talking about in breaches of the week is simply this. I'm wondering, and I'm asking a question here, is somebody probing power plants worldwide? And I could probably do a deep dive on this, but hear me out. Now, if you remember, it might have been my last radio show or the show before that, I talked about a massive electrical failure in Argentina that basically shut down major urban cities like Buenos Aires and some other places. That happened on June 16th. Now, the Argentinians are keeping pretty tight-lipped on that, but we believe in the cybersecurity community that it's probably a cyber attack, given just how quick and effective the outage was. And the reason why I'm saying that is because we just saw something very similar in South Africa, although the South Africans are being a little more forthcoming with information. A ransomware attack hit an electric utility called City Power. Now, they supply a good chunk of power to South Africa, including Johannesburg, and basically the attackers encrypted all of their systems, including databases and applications. This is one of the largest power suppliers in South Africa, and basically at the time, customers were reporting multiple power outages on Twitter, and it had not been confirmed at the time that all of these power outages were related, but they would inevitably have to be, because it's usually called a cascade failure. So I'm very curious to see where this goes. We've seen other groups, intelligence agencies like the Russians, for example, probe power plants and knock them out. We saw that in the Ukraine in 2014. We've seen power plants in the United States probed as well, but not knocked out, although we did have a major outage in New York a short while ago, New York City. So we're going to see where this goes, but I think, like our schools, colleges, local municipalities are under attack, I think this one is going to continue to grow. And if somebody is able to get foothold in the power plant, it's very possible to knock out electrical infrastructure across large swaths of the United States or other large countries, and small ones as well. So we'll see what that is. But whoa, those were your breaches of the week, and that was an absolutely crazy list. Were you affected? Let me know. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin. And this deep dive is about the U.S. election, specifically the security regarding the election. And we've got another major election coming up, a presidential election in 2020. And quite frankly, our security right now is actually a bit of a joke. I don't even know what other way to describe it, but let me take you through some of the things here, because we have a multi-pronged problem with election interference and election, election scrutiny, not to mention influence from foreign actors like Russia. And now we're seeing an increase from others as well, like Iran, North Korea, et cetera, et cetera. But bear with me here, because there's quite a lot to unpack, but it's a very serious issue, because one of the most sacred things that we have is a free and fair election. That's one of those things that the world looks to us to ensure that, you know, we are a republic, that we have fair elections, that we are electing those people that legitimately get the majority of the vote, in their state, in their county, for the president, the majority in the state that therefore gets the electoral college, and on and on. But we have learned some stuff. So on Thursday, July 25th, the Senate Intelligence Committee basically concluded that election systems in all 50 states were targeted by Russia in 2016 in an effort that is far more reaching than previously acknowledged, and one that was largely undetected by states and federal officials at the time. Now, this report, for the record, is bipartisan. So this is not a partisan issue, and we'll get to that a little bit. But while the details of many of these hackings directed by Russian intelligence, particularly in Illinois and Arizona, were well known, the committee described, and I quote, an unprecedented level of activity against state election infrastructure. Now, this was intended largely to search for vulnerabilities in the security of election systems. Now, this report concluded that while there was no evidence that any votes were changed in actual voting machines, and believe me, we're going to be getting to that point later in this deep dive, I quote, Russian cyber actors were in a position to delete or change voter data in the Illinois voter database, as well as some others. Now, the committee found no evidence, though, that they did so. Again, we'll be talking about that. So here's the thing. We have basically a bipartisan report, and the Intelligence Committee has been historically bipartisan, sometimes run by Republicans, sometimes run by Democrats. But at the end of the day, obviously, they're trying to take the United States security into their best interests. And one of the things that they've been perpetually recommending, as have pretty much the entire cybersecurity community, because quite frankly, we're the one in the trenches here doing this. While I'm on the radio, my actual day job is in cybersecurity work. You can literally hire me for cyber defense strategies and stuff like this, including governments. So we are all basically recommending we have to turn up election security to 11, but we are facing roadblocks in the Senate for approval. Now, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, basically, he is a Republican from Kentucky, the majority leader. He moved once again in the last couple of weeks to block consideration of election security legislation that was put forward once again. This time it was put forward by a Democrat. Now, Mr. McConnell has long opposed giving the federal government a greater hand giving the federal government a greater hand in state election authority, and that I can understand the concept of the separation between, let's say, state rights and federal rights and all of this. But we are talking also about federal elections. So I think that the federal government kind of supersedes states' rights in this sense. But despite the warnings about these Russia threats, he is arguing, Senator McConnell is arguing, that Congress has already done enough, passing $380 million worth of grants for states to update their election systems and supporting executive branch agencies as basically they're making their own changes. But quite frankly, when we are looking at a vast amount of voters, and we have 330 million people in this country, and I believe roughly something like 150 million of us can vote, myself included, $380 million to literally look at every city, state, municipality, create a standardization becomes a problem. Not to mention each state is going to handle those funds in a different way. You know, Illinois might turn themselves up, but our neighbors in Indiana might not do anything with it or do something that isn't effective, or vice versa, or whatever. I'm not picking on Indiana, or anything like that. But you know what I mean? Like, this is one of those things. And so he said, and I quote Mitch McConnell here, it's just a highly partisan bill from the same folks who spent 2 years hyping up a conspiracy theory about President Trump and Russia, and who continue to ignore this administration's progress at correcting the Obama administration's failures on this subject. Now, here's the thing. I think most of us believe that this is an issue that is going to transcend, you know, a situation between Obama, which we know there was election, you know, issues there. And it was under the Obama watch starting in 2008 that we really started seeing cyber attacks, which had been going on obviously well before the Obama administration. But the world, it wasn't just the Obama administration, the world saw just a massive explosion in hacking attacks, political influence, and all of these things by state-sponsored actors. Not to mention just rogue hackers and all this kind of stuff. And so I don't necessarily agree with Senator McConnell on this, you know, nor do I want to make this a political issue in the sense that I can understand that people say, oh, you know, Russia got President Trump elected, you know, and all these kinds of things. I'm not making that claim. I'm simply talking directly about how we should be making our elections more secure. And I think that Senator McConnell is deflecting from that, turning it into a partisan issue. Now, on the other side of the aisle, then on the Democrat side, Senator Chuck Schumer said, and I quote, "This is not a Democratic issue. This is a Republican issue. This is not a liberal issue, a moderate issue, a conservative issue. This is an issue of patriotism, of national security, of protecting the very integrity of American democracy, something so many of our forebears died for." Now, I agree with part of what Senator Schumer is saying here in the sense that it is about protecting the integrity of American democracy. You know, and if you cannot have fair and open and honest elections, then what kind of state do you actually have? And I think that's, you know, they're very important. I would also say that this is a bipartisan issue, agreeing with Senator Schumer as well. Not necessarily sure about patriotism, you know, in this. It's simply black and white. We're either securing our elections or we aren't, you know, and by that sense, I guess you could apply patriotism to that. But I think he's right. This is not a Democrat or Republican issue. I don't care where you are in the political spectrum. I don't care if you love Trump or revile him. The point is that he should be elected freely. And if he was, great. If he wasn't, that needs to be looked into. The next president of the United States, whether that's 2020 or 2024, whenever he or she gets elected, we need to make sure that's an honest vote. And I think that's the most important thing. But if we look deeper into this, we can see that there are multiple facets to Russian influence within our election system. And let me tell you about three of the core things that we know that have been proven. The first one is the Internet Research Agency. Now, if you're not familiar with them, this basically came to light in the wake of the 2016 election. And basically, the Internet Research Agency is a Russian company based in St. Petersburg, Russia, and it engaged in online influence operations on behalf of Russian businesses and the Russian government themselves. Now, basically, a January 2017 report issued by the United States intelligence community, and it's called Assessing Russian Activities and Intentions in Recent U.S. Elections, described the agency as a quote-unquote troll farm, writing, and I quote, "The likely financier of the so-called Internet Research Agency of professional trolls located in St. Petersburg is a close Putin ally with ties to Russian intelligence. They previously were devoted to supporting Russian actions in Ukraine and started to advocate for President-elect Trump as early as December of 2015. And so the Senate intelligence, above and beyond this, what they did was they released all of these accounts. They released all of everything that they did, and you could download them and read them, which I did. Now, the Internet Research Agency had employed fake accounts registered on basically major social networking sites like Facebook, LinkedIn, all of this. They went on discussion boards, online newspaper sites, video hosting services to basically promote Russia's interests in domestic and foreign policy, but using that as a spin to say, okay, this is what we should be doing in the United States. And they attempted to influence the 2016 election. More than 1,000 employees reportedly worked for the IRA, the Internet Research Agency, in 2015. Now, the Senate released these, like I just mentioned, and you could go download literally every advertisement that the Internet Research Agency put out, and they got millions of followers, comments, likes, reshares, retweets, whatever that was. And these ads were interesting. On the same day, they would be releasing ads that were targeted to different demographics, basically saying, we cannot trust our police because our police are, you know, brutal and they kill people and all of this. You cannot vote for, you know, this. And in the same token, different demographics in the same community, they would post stuff like, we support our police, our boys in blue, like all this kind of stuff. They are literally attempting to influence swaths of the population on political leanings that, you know, that would then be at odds with each other within the same community, basically trying to flame tension. And I think that's a very interesting tactic to use, but the Russians have been doing it all over. I wrote an article for Forbes in 2018, basically saying, here's the proof that the Russians are hacking everybody. And they have been influential in multiple elections across Europe and the world where their interests are best served. So, for example, they started buying media companies in Greece, to try to influence media there because Greece obviously had a very serious economy issue. They influenced the Five-Star Movement in Italy, as a result of that, and we saw a lot of clashes and protests and aggressiveness and violence with the Five Star Movement in Italy's elections, for a new government. They did basically the UKIP, the UK Independence Party. They were influencing them financially as well. And this is all documented. I literally wrote an article for Forbes on this, primary sources. You can go check that out. But we know that they do this. And that's only one prong of the overall attack and influence. To compound this, we have a serious problem in the development of our voting machines. They are very easy to hack and break into. And so when I talked about earlier, the report said they don't think that they actually changed voter totals, in voting machines. They're still very easy to break, and we need to make sure that we're holding our contractors feet to the fire. And I will give you this exact thing from 2018 in this article. Basically, DEFCON had a hackathon. Now, DEFCON is one of the major, cybersecurity, cyber offense conferences that goes on annually in Las Vegas. They had a hackathon, meaning you could go test your hacking skills. And an 11-year-old kid managed to hack into a Florida State voting website. Basically, it was a replica of it, security and everything. And he was actually able to change the results of the fake election in the website in under 10 minutes. That's an 11-year-old kid. I was a nerd back then too. I was into hacking. That is ridiculous because there is no solid defense in front of that. That's a problem. And if voting machines are online, that's a very serious issue because if they're connected to the internet, even if they're behind a firewall, we may be able to hijack and work around that firewall. I literally do cybersecurity assessments for companies where I'm able to evade firewalls, the standard firewalls that are out there, download infections through them, all this kind of stuff. It's nuts. And we've seen other hacking issues with major major manufacturers of voting machines, like Diebold, for example, and some others. The Department of Homeland Security even got involved a few years ago, well before the 11-year-old boy, was able to hack this thing, and nothing really came of it. And the proof is an 11-year-old kid literally hacked the Florida State voting website. Or an imitation of it, exactly. So that is crazy. And finally, the third prong of this is that Russia has a lot of power and influence in corporations. Now, they have some billionaire oligarchs that have very deep ties to Vladimir Putin. And what ends up happening is they start buying corporations that may own critical infrastructure, like data infrastructure, that could be used by states for elections. And this is exactly what happened, the state of Maryland. Now, basically, the Election Commission for Maryland had a new firm take ownership of hosting Maryland's election after federal investigation into a previous vendor pulled up Russian ties. Now, Maryland's election administrator, Linda Lamone, said this was last year, that the state will use IntelliShift, which is a Virginia-based data center, and its subsidiary, the Citus Group, basically through December 31st. Now, the Citus Group was previously a unit of ByteGrid LLC. Now, the FBI revealed in July of 2018 that ByteGrid was connected to Vladimir Putanin, a wealthy ally of basically President Vladimir Putin. So Putanin is an investor in a private equity firm, AltPoint Capital of Greenwich, Connecticut, and they bought an ownership stake in ByteGrid in 2011. Now, ByteGrid through the Citus Group hosted Maryland's online voter services, election night website, voter registration, candidacy and election management systems. And so if we have an organization like ByteGrid that is sitting there and they are owned in part by Russia, or a Russian organization, or let's say a Russian oligarch, does that person have the ability to influence the back end of that, put people in strategic positions that would, let's say, administer or run ByteGrid that may, let's say, give surreptitious access to Russian intelligence, open up a back door? this kind of thing. And we see these kinds of things all the time. It's why a lot of Russian-based companies, when they're trying to buy U.S. companies, and same for China, Chinese-based companies trying to buy U.S. companies, a lot of them have to be improved by acts of Congress. But if we are literally having our voting infrastructure sitting in a data center that is in part owned by a Russian oligarch with deep ties to Vladimir Putin, even if nothing happens, that is a huge red flag in terms of just ensuring end-to-end data security through the complete chain of custody for data, because we don't necessarily know what's going on with the back end of that. And that's crazy. And I know that other organizations in the government host with ByteGrid as well. And so that is something that we really need to consider when we're doing our due diligence in picking these things. But Maryland obviously found this out due to an FBI investigation and decided to pull their data out of ByteGrid, and rightfully so. Even if it hadn't been accessed, having that Russian influence is a big issue. So we can't really escape this. We can't really look at this and say, oh, yes, well, you know, we've got, you know, we have all of these things that are going on, and Russian influence is fake news, because we literally have bipartisan reports from Russia. We have literally the ad campaigns that the Internet Research Agency from Russia ran. We literally have voting machines that are, quite frankly, very easy to hit, to the point where an 11-year-old boy can literally break into a voting website in under 10 minutes at literally a hacking marathon, a hackathon. And we have Russian billionaire oligarchs buying or having influence potentially in infrastructure, data infrastructure in the United States that is used to host election systems for states like Maryland and God knows who else. So that is the whole of this. And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.